Morning, everyone. We're wrapping up utilizing God's gifts. If you haven't found the handout, there should be some available in the entryway yet. Otherwise, it's also included online. If you want to go to our website, or if you get the Saturday email, it should be available there too. We are in part three, stewardship, leadership. We're looking at 2 Corinthians chapter 8. 2 Corinthians 8 in the Bible, stewardship, study guide, part three. Let's look at 2 Corinthians 8, verses 16 to 24. 16 to 24. Anyone got those words in front of them to read for us? You got them? All right.
I thank God, who put into the heart of Titus the same concern I have for you. For Titus not only welcomed our home, but he is coming to you with much enthusiasm. And we are sending along with him, the brother who is praised by all the churches for his service to the gospel. With his war, he was chosen by the churches to accompany us, and he carried the offering which we administered in order to honor the Lord himself and to show our eagerness to help. We want to avoid any criticism of the way we administer this liberal gift, for we are taking pains to do what is right, not only in the eyes of the Lord, but also in the eyes of men.
Okay, 2 through 24. Yep, so we're going to get into the background again as we go through the questions. And Paul was encouraging the believers here to complete the gift that they had started, and now takes it to another level about the leadership in dealing with this gift, of handling it on both sides, from the givers as well as to the recipients. That word liberal in verse 20 literally can be translated thick or significant. That's a beautiful way of describing it too. This was a thick, significant gift that was transpiring. So what made Titus a good choice to be the one to go to Corinth and help the Corinthians finish gathering this offering for the believers in Jerusalem? What made Titus a good choice? He was enthusiastic, okay? Had the heart for that. He shared Paul's heart for the gospel, for the believers throughout the world, and so he could be trusted, and he was willing to serve too in this way. So leadership has those characteristics, right? Passion for the gospel, reliability factor, trust, and also a willingness. How did Titus feel about being asked to participate in this stewardship endeavor? I mean, he was willing to serve. How else can you describe it?
He was enthusiastic. He was one of those who said, you know, send me.
Yeah, we definitely echo that enthusiasm that he had, send me, that willingness to serve. Not only, you know, am I willing to serve, I welcome the opportunity to serve. In verse 18, what is meant by brother? Fellow believer, right? Fellow Christian. And what two qualifications does this brother possess? Okay, love for God and love for fellow human beings, right? Okay. He was respected by the churches. That's huge. And so fitting words of praise, as well as then chosen by the churches, because they recognized his passion and his ability So what is the purpose of this offering for the Jerusalem believers? We've talked about that before. To honor the Lord, to show their eagerness to help one another. You know, the Gentiles, this is their opportunity to say thanks to the Jews who shared the gospel with them. Now in your time of physical need, we who have the opportunity to fill that need, even though from a worldly point of view it wasn't a plethora, but they gave what they were able, they were able to show their desire to serve. So why is Paul so careful in his choice of men to accompany him when he takes the offering to Jerusalem? What does he want to avoid? All these type A questions. Yeah, any type of criticism, right? And we're going to apply that, in a moment. Acts 20, you don't have to go to it now, but Acts 20 gives us a reference of eight men representing all the congregations that accompanied Paul to Jerusalem. Yes?
Have you already kind of been burned in that whole John Mark thing at this point once? I don't know that chronology too well of when this is, but he got burned on, the guy bailed on, right?
Yeah, with John Mark bailing on him, right?
And so I don't know if he'd already been burned. We're not doing that again, or what?
Yeah, and Paul just knew from his own background how things could be maligned and criticized. And here's the Holy Spirit setting the tone then already for us today as far as being everything above board.
And I was kind of thinking, it's also, that's kind of why, even here, we don't just put out a sign-up list for every responsibility around. Well, who wants to preach next week? Sign-up.
Right.
I mean, it's got... you got to be fairly choosy and try to find the right gifts and match it up and all that too.
Exactly. We want to utilize God's gifts properly. You want people, again, willing, passionate. So what in verse 22, why will the Corinthians welcome this second brother when he comes? How's it described? Yeah, already proven, right? The great confidence. In the Corinthians. What letters of recommendation do these men bring with them?
One from Paul, one from their own church. It's showing that they were appointed to do this.
Okay, so you got Paul behind it, Titus behind it, the fellow workers behind it. The brothers represented, their own respective congregations. And as appointed delegates, so there were, again, there was a way to carry this out with honor, with respect. So who is Titus? He's Paul's partner in the work. He wasn't circumcised to make a point that circumcision isn't what gets you into heaven. Timothy, again, was circumcised, so not to be a barrier in the ministry. Titus wasn't. Paul wanted to make sure, okay, we want to also set the tone and say it's not circumcision or uncircumcision, it's faith.
I think it was, could Luke as possible as one of the two brothers that went. Barnabas was another one that they mentioned in there that is one of the two.
Right.
And those two are remember.
Yeah, so it could be taken in a way specifically looking for names. Or just emphasizing the two brothers, representatives, some representatives, whether we know exactly who it was that Paul is referring to there. But they were official messengers of the church. So to Mike's point earlier, it wasn't just somebody appointing themselves to carry out this. These were people who were vetted, who were approved of, who were representing in official capacity. So that leads to a discussion. What do these verses teach us about proper criteria in choosing leaders for a congregation stewardship program? I mean, you could apply this to any ministry aspect in the church, but for our purposes today, we're talking about stewardship.
I mean, set things up for success, right? No different than the NFL. Yeah. You're going to throw that rookie in there and just watch it be green. It's the same thing. It's just some human knowledge of, does this person have some gifts, some abilities, some credibility, some training,
Sure.
Set it up for success. I mean, thankfully, it's not in our hands, the success of the ministry. Thank God it's not. But you know, do the best we can humanly.
Right, we do want to,
we also want to avoid any impropriety.
Right.
We don't want anything that should be from the outside being criticized.
Correct. So to avoid any misappropriation, even the accusation of, to avoid detracting from God's message of law and gospel, again, you want people who have the qualifications. They have that love for Jesus, that passion, they have a good reputation, they have a maturity in faith, a willingness to serve. I mean, in any position too, we don't just want to fill positions with bodies, because that can come back as well, be detrimental to the person who's filling that spot as well as to the church at large. You want that spiritual maturity. Because again, we are a business in a sense. We're God's business, and we're making spiritual decisions. So you want spiritually minded people in those positions to make sure that we're doing things according to God's business plan, not human business plan. And sometimes too, we humans, how do we like to motivate people? Guilt. We like the 2x4, but God reminds us that's not the kind of motivation He wants. Right? You do have to have that willingness along with the maturity in there. And you may have somebody, who's mature in faith, and they're burnt out for one reason or another, and so that wouldn't be wise either, because they're doing it not with a cheerful heart, but with a heart of obligation. And so we have to respect that too. And so that's why, in a sense, there are term limits. And just with this, the lives of people today, I mean, even long terms in office aren't the way to go right now. Shorter commitments, people can usually fulfill shorter commitments and can always renew. So they do want to have a concern for others, not just for themselves. And so that's where the good reputation, you're coming to a stewardship appeal, you want to understand law and gospel correctly, because again, motivation is huge there. And emphasizing that giving is to be from the heart, and not just looking at someone's bank account and say, you should be giving this.
I think it's a special gift to the church that you've got people willing to serve in spite of just being discouraged about how the work is going on.
Right? Our strength has to come from the Lord, because it can be discouraging work, and so that spiritual maturity to help you through that. There too, you don't want somebody who has been known to have some issues with money, all of a sudden in charge of your stewardship appeal. And not just the stewardship appeal, but then also your day-to-day accounting. You want to have people who are responsible in charge of that too, checks and balances.
You need people that want to do it and have a heart, but also qualified enough to do it, so that there is no question of whether it may not be the most qualified. You don't need to be necessarily a CPA to do the treasurer's job, but you need to be able to be clear and concise and keep good records. And some people can't, and that's not the person for that job.
Right, it's also to help too, we're trying to develop partnerships in ministry. Maybe a congregation doesn't have that person who has that financial expertise, for example. Why have a person struggle through that? I mean, the rules keep changing, as you know, in the workforce. That applies to the church too. Now, some people are amazed that we pay taxes. Why you pay taxes? Of course we pay taxes. Why not utilize, like Hope Penrhyn? Okay, they got somebody who understands financial accounting, and so let's partner with Hope and you know, as an example. I think congregations are more open to that, and not to be afraid of ask questions. And wells, too. We have great resources that we can tap into nowadays. That's a benefit of technology that wasn't there maybe, you know, years ago. But even elders, right? I mean, who wouldn't serve on your board of elders? Who wouldn't be on your board of elders to encourage people to come to church?
Someone who doesn't come to church.
Someone who doesn't come to church, you know? Well, it'd be good to talk for outreach. Okay, let this person's new to the church. They're on fire for Jesus. Why may it not be a good idea to put that person on the outreach board right away?
They may run into a few stone walls when I go out there and an aging gym there and do the CS.
Yeah, to Ed's point, then you can come across some disappointment and frustration, and you're not, why isn't everybody else's passion as I'm as passionate? Plus, again, you can have a zeal and a passion, but it's still, if you're new into the faith, it could be misguided. And so all of a sudden you're going, hey, let's do a kumbaya moment. You know, why is the doctrine of fellowship important? Why can't we have open communion? They're just having a chance to grow up into that, into appreciation for those things. So when they get into those conversations, they're not taken back.
I was kind of thinking of the other side of the coin too, that I think in ministry there's also a place for taking a little bit of risk, a calculated risk. Because you can talk yourself out of doing almost anything. Wow, I might not work, you know, and you know, shoot, I think about like just the calculated risk this congregation took to keep the school open. Wow, look at that. That was a good one. There have been some other ones that maybe weren't so good. So I think there's, you know, I don't know how you choose that. I mean, you're like on a district mission board, right? You get so many opportunities and they all look really good and you don't have a unlimited amount of resources, and how to take those calculated risks and trust the Lord at the same time is an interesting other side of the coin, right? So.
Right, calculated risk and trust, bottom line. You know, that is important. Jesus says, too, don't build a tower without counting the cost first. I mean, common sense applies. But also, as Christians, all the more, we should have the desire to fall forward. Because, again, who's there leading and guiding us? Yeah, God didn't tell us to build walls around ourselves. He said, you know, be there, be out there and be the salt and light. Well, you can't build a wall and be salt and light. So there is some calculated risk. You know, when it comes to witnessing your faith, are you always comfortable doing that? Even with somebody you know? I mean, there's a risk there. But, okay, fall forward in that risk. For yourself, and then also, too, the Lord may bless that seed that's been planted right before your eyes, too. All right. So what is the primary purpose of our offerings?
Glorify God.
Glorify God. Right? That's why the thank offerings are a part of worship. Because it is a way to honor God. Again, because as we've said, does God need our money? Does he need our time, our talents? No. But he's given all to us to honor him, to glorify him with such. Now, what steps might congregational leaders take to reduce the risk of being criticized for the way they handle the church's offerings? You know, we've talked about some of this already, and there's other good common sense ways, you know, not putting the responsibility of the thank offerings, for example, in one person's hands, requiring accounting and reports. Communication is important, right? So
I think you're always going to have that. So people will say, "Why did they do this?"
And right.
Maybe not understand the reason why, but there'll be some criticism.
Sure, and some of that, you don't just want the yes people, you want the little pushback, but again, motivated by a heart of love. You know, too, like with our ministry financial plan, again, we develop a ministry plan, and now what's the financial plan to support that ministry plan? Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But if you're just focused, if you're letting the finances drive your ministry, is that really utilizing God's gifts well and maximizing the gifts before us? So planning is important, and then together with that, the financial plan. And thankfully, too, a financial plan gives the treasurer freedom to pay bills. You know, there are some churches yet where every bill has to be approved of, you know, first. The light bill. Well, call Joe, call Charlie. Do they sign off on it? I mean, you got to give your treasurer freedom. You got guidelines. So, you know, the financial plan is not a stopgap. It's a guideline. It's freedom to run the ministry this way, which has been approved by the congregation. And so that's why, too, is it beneficial to tear apart line by line rather than overall? Because then if you're doing line by line, how can I put this? Are you making yourself more important than you ought? And is that really benefiting the church? Or is that discouraging people from serving? If I'm going to be, you know, there's scrutiny and then there's scrutiny. You know, we got to be careful there too. Sometimes we may be well-intended, but we can turn off a volunteer in a hurry. And have.
Yes, but by the same token, you want transparency. There's accountability for them to be able to show the records and that they aren't writing checks to getting Kings tickets.
Right. Exactly. Right. There's an accountability. That's where you have plenty of people. That's where the trust factor. If you don't trust the people in charge on your boards and committees, then that's another matter. I mean, that's really what Paul gets to. If you can't trust people in their various positions, there's a spiritual problem that needs to be addressed first.
It's important to have that line by line available to somebody that wants to read it and look at it, but not necessarily at the meeting. You know, when you're talking about you want to probably break down. We're going to do this at the school, this at the church, this at this, in gross numbers versus going on it. You can do it a lot because you can kill yourself a minute.
And that's more the point of it. It's not saying you can't have that availability, but how we go about God's work. Are we doing it to God's glory, or are we doing it because I just want to be a crank?
We've beaten enough dead horses in these meetings, and that's like a promise.
So it's just more of an attitude that's being set. It's not a criticism to this place and that comment. There's no need for me to write about this service to the saints. Why not? Moving on to 2 Corinthians 9, I missed that. 2 Corinthians 9, I got my wheels spinning here. Yeah, the Corinthians already know about it, right? Then why does Paul write about it anyway? What needs a continual reminder and put down?
Encouragement.
We need encouragement. The new man wants encouragement, seeks encouragement. The old Adam is going to continually resist encouragement. And so Paul writes this anyway to put down the old Adam and to encourage the new man. And we've said that before too. Like when Chuck gets up and gives us a recap of where we're at, our new man welcomes that opportunity. The old Adam, why is he up there again talking about money? Now, again, there's a balance in there. As leaders, you try to avoid too, that we're not always coming to the congregation with a handout. And that's where part of that ministry financial plan comes in too. Because you can have donor fatigue. And that's like with our school too. We want our school to be sustainable on its own too. So with a tuition model. Because if you're too reliant on third source giving, what can happen with third source giving? It can go away. And also then the donor fatigue. You know, have you been a part of sports leagues or music programs or in your own school where they're constantly doing fundraisers? And do you look forward to the next one? You know, so we can't get to that fatigue point. And as a church, we want to be careful and sensitive to that. We can have bingo games, sure. Yeah. Our bingo's free. Yeah. When we do bingo, we don't charge people. But we give gifts away. Yeah, it's called Grace Bingo, exactly. Grace Bingo. All right, moving on. What does Paul call the offering in this verse? Verse 1, 2 Corinthians 9.
Service.
Service to the saints. Ministry. Again, repeat of something we said before. Our offerings are not just dollars in the plate. We're doing ministry through those offerings. How far had the gospel spread beyond Corinth?
Over to Rome, even. It's spread all over the whole Mediterranean.
Right?
Quite a ways and so that.
And if you look at those references, you'll see different parts of the world. Reputation gets out there, the gospel along with it. How had the Corinthians served as an example for the Macedonians? Again, they were ready to act a year ago. So why did Paul send these men to Corinth? Did the Corinthians still need to do something?
He sent the Corinthians, they got a little lax. They had done some stuff, and they enthusiastic in the beginning, and then kind of, oh well, oh how.
Right. So they've lost their enthusiasm, to regain that enthusiasm, to make sure the offering would be ready when Paul would come through so that he could keep on going to Jerusalem. So what indication do we have in these verses that Paul is interested more in the attitude of the Corinthians than in the amount of the gift? Verse 5.
He talks about being a generous gift and not grudgingly given.
Yeah, be generous, cheerful, not grudgingly given. And so that really, again, this wraps up the whole conversation so far as trust, reliability, attitude. It's not the amount that God looks at, but the heart, the attitude behind it. And so then as leaders, we need to be mindful of that too. It's not dictating the amount people give, but the attitude that they give from and with. Having said, there is no need for me to write to you about this service to the saints, Paul proceeds to do just that. What does this teach us?
Do we need to have
this?
Need to have
this. Right. If the choir's not singing on key, right, so then that's going to throw off everybody else. Right, we need that reminder repeatedly. Our old Adam needs to be drowned. Our new man needs to be encouraged, right? So we need that. And just like following a recipe, to follow it, to get that end result, every time you want to follow that recipe. And so same here too. God's given us the perfect recipe. Let's follow it. One important thing members of the body of Christ can do for each other is to encourage one another. How can we do this in the matter of giving?
I think there's so many good things happen. We're not always very good at celebrating. On to the next problem. Do you guys know what we accomplished Friday night? I don't know how many hundreds and hundreds of people walked through. And, all right, what's next? Instead of, wow, that was pretty awesome. I don't know, 600-700 people walked through on Friday night? Are we having a celebration? Probably not, because Reformation service on 4 o'clock on Sunday. We got to get ready.
Right. Taking the time to celebrate accomplishments. Don't just pass by them. I mean, remember who's given us the opportunity to make this accomplishment, to put the opportunities in front of us. So it goes back to communication, how we talk about things. We need to talk it up more, and how we talk about it, Penny?
Yeah, Hebrews says, let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let's encourage each other all the more as you see the day approaching.
Right, so why do we want to be busy doing the ministry through stewardship?
Because that's the one thing that lessens eternity.
Right? And so Jesus in Luke points out, use your earthly wealth to make friends for heaven. You know, so how everyone who calls in the name of the Lord will be saved. So as we use our offerings in that light, we see the purpose. We see a reason to celebrate. We're able to conduct like the trunk or treat. Now again, we weren't advertising the earthly message of trunk or treat, but we use it as an opportunity to connect with people who we would not connect with. And I just noticed that the overwhelming response of the people who were on campus, they're so appreciative that they could come to us and get to know us, and we would do this for them. Over and over again I heard that. Thank you for doing this for us. And then we had opportunity to share information about our school, our church, our mornings with mommy. And people are letting their light shine. So it was a good opportunity. Again, ideal in the minds of some? No. But like Paul said, we try to do all things without compromising the gospel so that we can reach people. And that was another example. Yes.
And you did reach people. My family and I came here Friday for the first time, and my kids are in Sunday school. I have 3 under 10, and I'm here too.
Great to see you, Samantha. Thank you. Yes.
While Penny was reading about don't give up being together and all that, I was kind of thinking that stewardship, it's a big time, it's a team sport, right? Maybe you're kind of having one of those, you know, write your check, you know, or whatever, and you're kind of in a lull, and maybe you come and you hear somebody else who just got done on some landscaping project and they're all fired up. And you kind of feed off each other through the ups and downs and that too. So it's a team thing as well. We encourage one another that way.
And it is a team thing, how we can encourage one another. Because, you know, how we speak about the church, just in general, too, about the church that we go to, that reputation gets out and about. And so we want to encourage our fellow members. You know, if there's something that needs to be corrected, let's be adults and let's correct it, if we can. But also, how it can impact others. Maybe not, they don't belong to St. Mark's, but they belong to a different church. And how maybe what they heard through you in a conversation can, well, maybe I need to be a little more open-minded, less judgmental, get back into the Word, let that guide us, in that my opinion. Because sometimes, again, what did Jesus always emphasize? Humility. Sometimes our pride gets the best of us, and we think we're the only ones who got the answer. And you young whippersnapper. You know, so isn't that ironic? We want to encourage the young people to get involved, and as soon as they do, we criticize them. How does that fit Hebrews 10? You know, another way around, though, too, young people have to realize just because you're old doesn't mean you're out of touch. I mean, so we have to learn from each other and equip each other and feed each other. All right. One important thing members of the body of Christ can do for each other is to encourage one another. Hebrews 10, little deja vu, right? Agree or disagree? Shame is a good motivator for giving.
Yes.
All right.
Yes, probably will, but I say yes.
I've seen your checks, Ed. They could be better. Okay, you're gonna hold on to that?
I'm sorry.
You're gonna hold with that? You're gonna stick with it?
I suppose.
Okay. His phone number is.
Shame may be a good short-term solution to getting money, but not a good long-term.
And God will put you to shame if you shame somebody into giving.
Are you talking about
Either one. That's the whole point of agree, disagree. You can go both ways.
All we do is drink is okay. There are these drinks is okay in me, but I have trust in God deeper and deeper. And as that trust deepens, our faith is stronger, we can do more.
Right.
It just rolls downhill. It's bigger and bigger and bigger. You want to do more. As your strength gets stronger, and as your trust gets deeper.
And that's bottom line too, right? So any stewardship emphasis needs to start with getting into the Word. So that for that to happen. So that faith can grow, and if faith responds then with, I want to, what can I do? And now here's the effort to say, great.
Shame focuses on the person saying that you are a bad person. It doesn't focus on the behavior of not providing. It says that you are bad. And I don't believe that's the way to motivate anyone.
Okay. Right? Good point. Right?
I'll just say, I don't think shame should be entered into it at all. It all has to come back to the heart. It has to be a willing heart.
Right.
Just like serving in any position has to be willingly done, giving has to be given the same way. If you don't do that, then you're giving for the wrong reason.
Okay.
Shame on me if I waste the gifts that God's given.
Yep. Right. And I was just, yep, saying, right. So, yeah, shame not by comparing yourself to somebody else, but your old Adam needs to be addressed. And if you hear what somebody else is giving, and again, the church isn't putting out the shame list, but you just, in a conversation, someone says, you know, I'm giving so-and-so, this is what I give. It doesn't have to be if you're having a conversation with a fellow Christian, just saying, you know, I just want to share with you what I'm doing. And that, I'm just saying, some people might have that conversation. So, you know, so Ed may feel internally, even though this wasn't the person's intent, of saying, I probably should re-examine. Because we have to be careful, just because, again, someone on the outside may look like they have much doesn't mean necessarily they're in a position to give much. Or maybe they are giving, but it's not all the, let's just say, St. Mark's. Because they may have other ministry efforts that they're supporting. So that's why we always want to be careful not to judge the book by the cover, so to speak.
Where we see a need, we have to be open to giving.
Yeah, where we see a need to be open to giving, we may not be able to. But there's other things that we can do besides financial giving. Again, we can pray for that ministry. We can, hey, maybe talk to Steve and say, hey, Steve, I know you were looking for another place to support. You know, I just heard about this opportunity. And, you know, again, that's another way.
Don? That's what I was going to say. We're always talking money, but this time and talent.
Correct.
The person may not have the money,
right,
but gives the time and the talent that they have to help. That's just as important.
And so that's where all those principles have come in so far. We talked about proportionate, you know, thought about, first fruits, cheerful, come into play. And not just with finances, but also with time and talent.
I think we have to, and I agree with you, but I think that we have to be very careful.
Yes.
I mean, we have to be careful with this.
Right.
It's too easy for some people to say, well, I only worked 5 hours up there, so then I've given that time, so that's going to make up for the tithing.
Right, and that hopefully as they get into the Word, they'll understand that it's a both and, not either or. But as we've said last time, somebody may not have the financial means, but they do have the ability and the time. Someone may not have the time and ability, but they got the financial means. Again, it can be a beautiful partnership. You can do both. Just like we always give that encouragement with scrip. Scrip is not a replacement for offerings. You know, you're getting, you're already buying gas and groceries. It's another opportunity to support an area of ministry. It's not a replacement for. And just a side note again, our primary focus as a ministry is our operating, our ministry financial plan. And we could have all these romantic things in the church. An older, he's now in heaven, you know, called all the things on the wish list romantic. People get caught up in, hey, I got that seal put up there and I got this there, but if you can't keep your doors open, what good is it? You know, so we want to keep our doors open, and keeping our doors open is doing day-to-day ministry, paying the bills, paying the mortgage, paying the staff, sending dollars to support mission work throughout the world. And so when we get that established, then we can continue to build off of that through wish lists and so forth. Then, as we said, if we really are all giving from the heart, we wouldn't be asking, where do we pull back? We'd be going, what do we do with the excess? Yes.
The church that I grew up in, they decided that the offset, and it's almost 70 years that it's been open, they would never take an offering. They had a box in the back, which is similar now to what we have. And so when you gave your offering, it was between you and the Lord. They found that the passing of the plate did bring the guilt thing. Oh my God, I'll put $2 in because the guy next to me sees me doing it. And it didn't work, you know. So when it's between you and the Lord, He just gives you that urge to want to put something in that box because you want to let Him know, not the guy next to you that you're putting in $5.
Yeah, it can be, right? Right? Yeah, you know, and it's hard too to get to know what everybody's thinking, because you could poll everybody, and half the people would say that didn't even cross my mind, and the other half would say, yeah, that has crossed my mind. So, and that's part of the understanding that goes along with too, is just because I'm thinking it doesn't. I'm not saying this to you, but just doesn't mean it's everybody's thinking this way or needs to think that way. But it is good to have discussion so that we can think about things in a different light and be a little more sensitive to how things, especially as we're dealing with people who aren't familiar with how the church operates. We definitely want to be even more sensitive to how that goes.
They never did have financial problems, but they always covered.
Yeah. I mean, the Lord Black provides.
When I was growing up in the Catholic Church, they used to do 3, sometimes 4 offerings. You know, they did one for the church here, one for the Cardinals thing, one for this, one for that. I don't know if people gave any more than the same thing they would have if they split it up, but it was what a pain. I mean, it really troubled me. You started saying, hey, all I want is money. That was the whole emphasis, you felt like.
Sure. It can be that way. Just on part 4, in the couple of minutes that we have left here, good discussion, thank you. Just stewardship blessings, note in the top there, the giver is blessed, people are helped, God is glorified, bonds of Christian fellowship are strengthened. You know, again, as we do mission work, it's sending our congregation mission offerings, think of the bonds of fellowship that are being strengthened throughout the world. And what Scripture today said too, you know, the gospel to every people, nation, tribe, and language. I mean, in heaven, we're going to have all that going on. And that's why Jesus did encourage, use the earthly wealth that I've given to you to make those bonds. But again, not out of guilt, out of love. Just looking at the discussion questions under part 4. No. I think all that stuff we've touched on. You know, here again, look at halfway down the page. Why would Paul spend 2 chapters talking about the stewardship of money without ever mentioning the word money? Again, as we've touched on, it's not just money, it's the attitude, it's our time, talent, everything that God gives to us. And are programs necessary? Yes and no. Again, we need those, we need reminders, we need encouragement. It depends what the purpose behind that is. Some people, I know there was a train of thought at one time, we need another worship service so we can have another envelope. Well, that's a good reason for adding another service. I mean, those are the kind of thoughts that you want to avoid. To your point, be in the Word, people are encouraged and motivated, the response will be there. And when it comes to sanctification, stewardship is part of sanctification. There's always going to be room for progress and growth. And that's why I talked about, again, the percentages versus the amounts, because amounts can be deceiving. Percentages, as your income goes up or down, you know, you have this percentage that you're starting with. And it's a starting point. Again, as the Lord blesses you with further means or time, give accordingly. And again, our gifts and time to the church better than gifts and time to another charity or the community?
Depends on the other charities.
It can depend, right, on the charity, but works for the church are not more sanctimonious than works in the community. Because again, through the community, we can also be salt and light. And it's a both and, not an either or. Well, again, there's so much more that we can talk about, and we will bring it up again in due time. But thank you for your seeing God's hand in your life. And praise God for that, giving you that vision and the response that He moves in you to give of your words of encouragement, of your time, your talents, and your financial offerings. As we said, we are blessed here at St. Mark's. With a great ministry to support, and we're in a good place right now. We pray it will continue to be so as the Lord prepares us for what is next. So it's not to sit on it, the blessings, but to use those blessings to move forward. Have a great rest of the day in the Lord.